You have, you know, the worst girlfriend in the world on stage five. I'm there.
Well, hello there, everyone. It's your friendly neighborhood podcaster, Daryl Ducharme, here with another episode of Seattle After Party Sessions. This week, I have an interview with three members of the band Late September Dogs. And we will talk about all sorts of things, but most importantly, they finally have out their LSD Orchestra project in the name of an album called Learning to Fall. So let's jump right in and hear from Late September Dogs.
You say so.
Yes, I do. It's my show. I say so. Let's have fun. Okay.
The other background on this, I think Jane is this. I don't know if you know this, Jackie, is that the first time Daryl had us on his show was 2015
years ago.
I had you on the show December 21st, 2014.
Okay.
Yeah, that was just you because Liz was sick.
Yep. And then I talked about how the record was going to be done in the next year, I think.
Yep.
That's what you always say. Uh-huh.
And then went back a year later and talked.
December 13th, 2015.
Yep. Okay.
And that time Jay was sick because it was like near his birthday and he had overstepped his bounds for being able to do anything the next day. So.
Sure. Oh, yep. Yeah.
So my birthday is on the 11th. It's 2015. That's 5 years ago. I was 35. Well, that might have been my 34th birthday because it's in December. I don't know the math on that, but we did have a big show.
Very important.
So, well, there was a big show at Slim's on my 34th. We had a lot of guest stars, and there was a lot of bottles of whiskey handed over to me that night, which was fantastic.
Which did not necessarily make it out of Slim's alive.
I have the recordings that prove that we at least got to sing that song from Firefly about Jane being the hero of Canton.
Nice.
Yeah. An ex-girlfriend showed up and tried to make out with me in front of her boyfriend that night, and we had to get carted out by the boyfriend's female friends before something terrible happened. And
that's always good times.
I think LSD, we did an acoustic show, and then Double Cross played an electric show right after that. But yeah, fun stuff.
Yeah.
And we talked about the record on both occasions being almost finished.
Yeah.
Yes. Both occasions. So that was 2015.
There's
almost finished.
Right.
Almost done. Any minute now.
Quite a lot of shows where certain songs were introduced by Liz as being on the next album coming out any day now.
Yeah. And that's the state you were in when I joined the band in 2016 also. So I recall almost finished. And now, like, after five or six times of hearing that, I just kind of would laugh every time. Like, yeah, okay. Almost.
Yes, and we got one final time talking with the three of them when I had Tracy Conway on the show as well.
Was that like 2016?
That was April 2016.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I was ready for this album to come out so much.
Yep, I'm great at this.
All right. So, but anyway, so like, obviously I've been watching all along, and like, I know Dan, you seem to be somewhat of a, perfectionist when it comes to this stuff. So, did you find any, moments where you're just like, I'm going to stop being a perfectionist in that way, or did it just get worse and worse along the way?
The eventual, the way that it ended up happening, it got taken completely out of my hands and handed to the sort of consummate professional. And I was relieved of my duties as mix engineer. And it could not have been handed to somebody with better qualifications. So I was given the gift of not having to examine my own choices too closely, which was great. And it saved us. I mean, I think it probably saved us months and months of time. But what it also did was kind of take a lot of the choices that I had made previously, that had taken so much time, and make them kind of irrelevant. So there is a big element of this where, yes, we finished tracking it at a certain time, and then we had to go back in, make a bunch of changes, and take a bunch of time. And if we had just skipped to the part where we handed off to a legendary mix engineer and let him do it, we could have compressed the whole timeline by like 3 years. But we didn't know him when it happened, and the whole thing kind of ended up working out for the best for us in terms of getting it mixed and mastered by the people that did it. So it wound up great anyway, but I sort of didn't examine my own process of mixing and editing and all this stuff enough and having to be kind of the engineer and the mixer and the editor and all this kind of stuff while trying to, you know, produce it and everything put me in a place that just wound up taking a lot of time and eventually didn't necessarily need to be that much work. So now I can make a record in, you know, 6 weeks. I learned enough about myself and the process that I can make a, you know, I can make a record in no time at all now. But
so the next time that we're talking and you have a new project, I'll be like, all right, so it's coming out in 6 weeks, right?
Oh yeah, no, it's almost done.
There are so many decisions on Dan's, like from Dan's perspective. Although he hasn't said this, I'm inferring this and I'm projecting this, but like with his level of expertise and his level of experience, and he's been through all this shit with his own band, seeing what happens when someone else takes control of the mixing and the mastering and the production process and fucks the whole band basically for the rest of their memories and their careers. And they're stuck with it because they can't afford to redo the whole thing because they were, you know, younger. And had less sort of juice and less chutzpah and less ability to bring everyone together and say, all this money is wasted, we got to do it over again. And then he's recorded and produced other people, and he's also been coordinating things with this band on a weekly basis for so many years. And he knows how to get so many good results out of us and also get good results out of the technology he's using. There are so many right answers to what the album should sound like. And when you hand all that off to someone like, I mean, are we good saying the name?
Yeah, we can say it. Yeah.
Chris Lardalgy, just he is so removed from what our feelings are. He is just a man who is trying to decode a puzzle. And he gets, like any good professional, a technical professional, there's no ego at stake other than what is this pattern showing me? What is the secret to success when I have all these choices? What do I minimize? What do I maximize? You know, I don't have to worry about anyone's feelings. I don't have to worry about like how long it took them to get that one guitar take that I'm pulling out of the mix. Like, who gives a shit? Whereas with someone like Dan, it's like he's been with us in the room multiple times in multiple studios for multiple years and multiple shows. And there's the like, here's what I can do. Here's what the listener might want. Here's what I want. Here's what seems to make sense from a budget standpoint of like, we're paying all this money for strings and horns and I want to maximize that effect. Like, there are a million good ways to mix this album. And Chris Lardalgy went in and just went, yoink, a few afternoons of my time in between maybe doing the new Blink 182 single and talking to the guys in Green Day, and we're good. I'm ready to go to an Italian restaurant, you know, where they cut off your hands if your credit's no good. now.
I like that he says yoink too. You know, that was a specific, that would be how I would choose my engineers.
That's like, what Roger Waters said about mixing Dark Side of the Moon for sure. Yeah.
He said yoink.
Yoink.
It was after watching Batman 66, I'm sure.
Yep.
Jackie, you look like you're ready to say something about.
Well, I was just waiting my turn. You know, I don't want to talk over people.
Oh, that's not going to work in this crowd.
That's why we have Jackie in the band, because she's not a feminist. She knows women wait their turn. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, God. Don't get me in trouble with my wife.
That side for a minute, Jace. I don't have it in me. No, I was going to piggyback on what Jay was saying and agree that, you know, Dan might.
She is a feminist. Oh, my God. Sorry.
Dan might think that it took a really long time, but I think that that's how long it was supposed to take, because it needed to take till 2016 so I could join the band, obviously. I could get on the record. Point. That threw, right? That's a very important part. That threw a wrench into things. That extended the time. We had things we wanted to add. Our performances were changing what was on the songs, even without orchestras. So that was changing, and we wanted to make sure we captured some of that. But also all of that additional time that Dan was putting into mixing and producing and all those things that I have no idea really what was going into it. He got it to a point where when we did hand it off to CLA, it was at a level that he wasn't just going to listen to for 10 seconds and turn it off and go, well, this is crap. You know, this is a garage band demo. You know, Dan got it to that point where we had something impressive to hand over. And then CLA just waves his magic wand over the end of it and says, okay, yeah, that's great. Ring, you know, and the glitter flies and all of the magic happens and all of that work paid off. And it got us to that moment. Without it, I don't think we would be where we are now. I don't think we'd have the product that we have now. And I think that obsession with detail, not even just attention, but that obsession with detail and every little thing is what makes it so amazing. And sure, you know, it took as long to make the album as it did to get a PhD, but I still think that that's how long it took to make this piece, you know. And maybe it'll be different. Definitely it'll be different in the future. But anyway, I just think Dan, you want to beat yourself up for it, but what you did was amazing, and I'm really proud of all of us.
Awesome. Oh, very hearts, all the hearts, all the love. There's so much love in this band. I love that. Now, I was at the early listening party, Liz told a story about how you ended up joining the band, Jackie, and it seemed like you were very... you were going to make sure that happened. So I'd like to hear it from your point of view. You were very like, this is how it's going to be.
She was determined. Yeah.
That's the word.
When you do want to get a job, this is the story of how you get any job you actually want.
Look, I mean, I'm not saying that, that I laid down the law, but I just kind of looked around and said, well, this makes sense to me. Does it make sense to you guys? Because if it doesn't, like, you have to tell me, as far as I'm concerned, I'm in the band. So, like, you're going to need to be really firm with me if that isn't the case. And I gave them that out. And just remember, I gave you that out. And now it's too late.
You had your chance.
Yeah, I tried. I tried.
But she also did things to make herself less disposable. Like, she invested time in doing more than she was asked to do, which is, you know, like.
Yeah. And I think there's a couple of things that we can sort of just clarify for anybody who wasn't at that, our listening party. And then,
whatever losers left in Seattle that didn't make it to that fucking get right.
The last get together.
You hated yourself because you missed out.
On the last party in Seattle.
Yeah, basically the last day anybody was able to be in the same place.
Yeah.
Basically, so two things. First of all, the story about mixing and producing the record. If anybody doesn't know the sort of background on that, basically we started making this record in 2012. 2013, we started with the idea of making an orchestra record, and then recording, producing, and mixing an album takes a long time. Even once you finish recording everything, you have to then edit and mix. And that's a very long, drawn out process when you don't have a record company behind you. And it's even more difficult when you decide that you're going to add an orchestra to a rock band. And by an orchestra, I mean a string section and a horn section and a choir. And for me, that means specifically trying to balance all of those instruments at the same time as making a rock band sound like a rock band. So that was that first part. The second part was Jackie joining the band was a story. I think that I will let Jackie tell kind of from the beginning. But we had started a fundraising, like an Indiegogo, and we wanted to shoot one song. We want to shoot a video for one song and record one song. And so we had kind of assembled a bunch of singers from around the Seattle area and had started rehearsing this one song with them in order to be able to record and show a video of one song with the orchestra in order to raise money to do the rest of the record. And so Jackie had started coming to those rehearsals, and the rest is I will leave up to Jackie.
Okay, yeah. So I came to rehearsals for the choir. I learned that song. And then they wanted to do, remember we did that show at El Corazon where you had Bradley come in and Liz wanted some choir members, you know, hey, we're gonna try this live. And the song is I Am Not Proud. And if you've heard it, and hopefully you have, there's a lot of really layered harmony parts throughout the chorus, and you really need to have like multiple voices singing those parts. So in order for that song to be performed live, it required some additional voices. And Liz asked, you know, who was available, and I happened to be available. I wasn't working a day job at the time. I was being a housewife of all things. And I was doing my cover band. So I was available. I was in vocal shape to do this. And I came to rehearsal once a week. You know, I was only coming to rehearsal for one song, but I would sit there for the entire rehearsal because I'm like, hey, when do you need me? When is the earliest I can be there and how late can I stay? And so I'd come for the whole rehearsal and I'd hear the other songs. And by the second rehearsal, I had an idea for another song and said, you know, hey, I thought of this harmony. Do you want to hear it? And Liz was excited and like, yeah, okay. So that started to build. I did that a couple more times. And I can't remember if it was three or four, but I came on for one song. I ended up doing at least three, if not four. I know it was, anyway. So I weaseled my way into the band, see, and I made a little spot for myself that like, if I'm not there, you're going to notice and you're going to miss me. So, you know, I have that move down.
That was the key. That was it. That was the like, yep. Do we really want to go back to the old way of doing this with only one female voice, considering that we're going to start building our live shows around these new songs where we plan to orchestrate things, you know, for the record. And, you know, it's, we're changing the way we play our guitars and the arrangements to sort of allow for extra voices and allow for extra instruments. You know, we have to be considerate of all these things. So yeah. Jackie.
So well done, Jackie. Yeah. I think that was really good way to get there. Just get that niche, create it, carve it out, you know, with a chisel. And then just sit there and just say, this is my space now.
Yeah.
I like that.
Well, see, I have two motives. I just wanted to hang out with Liz all day, every day. Right. So I was like, well,
understandable. yes. That's why Dan is still able to deal with her having his own sister in the band with him, is because like she's just worth hanging out with all the time. So, yeah. You know, not all brothers and sisters can do that.
No. I certainly cannot with mine. He's great. But, well,
Yes. Anyway, so I am obviously a fan of y'all, and definitely started listening to your album right away after that listening party. And I have to say, when I went to school for audio production and all that and music business, and one of the things I remember them talking about was front loading like a really good song with a really good intro at the beginning of your album. Now, gone are the days usually of albums anymore, except this is an album you released. So, but I have to say, the Curse Your Name as the first one, that whole intro, especially as the Orchestra Project album, I think that's just beautiful front loading. Was that what you were thinking about that as the first song on the album, or or did I just luck out and tell you what you can say going forward now that, yes, that is what you thought? No,
this is a fun story, actually.
Yeah.
The way that Chris Lord Alge got involved in the project is a whole story, but it turned out that what happened was, once he had basically done all the mixing, we flew down to LA to listen to the mix in his studio, which used to be Death Row Records. It's where all the Tupac records were made. It's this incredibly famous hip hop studio, and where he's been doing all of his mixing for the last 15 years. And so we flew down, and we were able to go into the studio, listen to the whole record in his studio where he mixed it. And the first day that we went to listen, to sit in his studio with him and listen to the record, he said, "Okay, I want you guys to think about song order." He's like, "I'm not going to tell you what your song order should be." He said, I have an idea, but you guys need to pick your song order. And so, when you go home tonight, talk about it and send me a song order. And then when we come back tomorrow, we'll listen to it all in order. And so we went back to the Airbnb. Correct me if I'm wrong about this. Well, I think we went back to the Airbnb. We sat around on a, like, just on the bed in one of the rooms and, like, wrote it on notepad paper. And it took 15 minutes. And then we went through the order and we stacked them up, and then we came out with the order and we sent it to him. And then the next day we went back in and we listened to it. And when we were done, he said, "Yeah, this is the perfect order. Like, this is exactly what I would have picked." And you guys, he said A plus or something. He said, "You guys nailed it," which I was really happy with. Like, he didn't have anything to change. We didn't change it from that order, that order that we came up with in about 10 or 15 minutes. So the order that's on the record is that sort of discussion we had, after hearing it for the first time. I think that's right. Is that right?
Jackie, you look like you might have been shaking your head a couple times there. I wasn't sure.
Did I miss something?
You were really close on the details. We were not on the bed. We were in the couches in the living room in the Airbnb.
It was a fold-out couch, yeah.
Yeah. And we had the speaker, remember? Because we were like, we wanted to listen to parts of it. And then it did not take 15 minutes, first of all. I'm pretty sure that took all day. It took at least an hour, because we started in the living room and we eventually had to go into your bedroom and keep talking about it while we were getting ready to do other things, because Dan's bathroom had the better lighting, so we did our makeup in there.
We were going out.
Well, he's a Madonna, so he needs the one with the better lighting. I know how it is.
Yeah. I remember us watching the pilot episode for The Heights and just deciding, well, what would The Heights do? Let's set the track.
Since he mixed How Do You Talk to an Angel.
Yeah.
Was that the night before? I don't remember.
But probably.
Maybe that was the Johnny Lang video extravaganza night. I forget.
So that was the NAMM trip.
There was a lot of cute boys on the TV for a while, and Jackie was really heavily influenced by that in her decision making, but
I remember the cute boys and where they fall in line. Yeah. That's the most important part. Yeah. So anyway, maybe like actual productivity was 15 minutes, but the whole process was it was a lot longer than that. Yeah. And but the thing I will say about that is we kind of had the order down. We just really agonized over it all day.
Yeah.
Because it almost seemed like it was too early. And we were giving other notes as well when we were thinking about the order. So we had to listen through all of the songs.
Right, right, right. I remember, yeah, we had to come up with the notes, but the specifically the order, I remember coming together fairly quickly. But I remember going through the notes for each, like the mix notes for each song. Like we had a couple things for each song that we needed that we wanted to change. But yeah, I think the order, but specifically that first song, I think we were always pretty sure Curse Your Name was going to be the opener.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was pretty
obvious. Your answer, Daryl. It was 10 minutes later that we got to it. But yes, we were pretty sure Curse Your Name was going to be the opener since that was the
question. I think what we got there was what actually happened. The process of it is like, yes, we were sure, but before we, even though we were sure, we had to have this whole talk about everything else, like which cute boy goes with this song, and was it a fold-out couch, or was it a couch, or a regular bed? I don't know. So
some shit's important.
That's why it takes us 7 years to put out a record like this.
Hey, as somebody who just talks and makes stuff up, you know, for like the happier parts of my life, I totally get it. So, yeah, I totally do. So, so Jackie, that means you've been with the band now for 4 years.
Yeah, actually, I just had my 4 year band anniversary the other day on the 8th, April 8th.
Awesome. And, what do you have to say about the band being with them for 4 years versus your other stuff? I guess you've got your cover band too.
Yeah. You know, it's a lot different, and I think the biggest difference is, my cover band, it's fun and we have a good time.
But you can name drop here too. We can sell all the stuff you do.
Okay. So my cover band, Time Machine Radio, which gigs all the time in the greater Seattle area, or at least used to before everything got shut down. Even though I have fun, we all have a good time in that band. I think we still all approach it kind of as if it's a business, as a job. You know, I call it my job because that's kind of how I approach it. I approach it with a certain level of professionalism. And while I do try to use a certain level of professionalism in Late September Dogs sometimes, kind of, as far as like showing up to rehearsal on time and practicing and being prepared, things like that. But with Late September Dogs, it is now and always has been more of a heart and soul kind of thing where, you know, how many times do Liz and I just like tear up in the middle of rehearsal because we're having one of those goosebump moments and everybody's feeling it and we're all grooving and everything just kind of lines up. And it just, I guess what I'm trying to say is it feels different, you know, it feels different. The music feels different. Performing it feels different. And having done a very brief interlude of an original band that I was writing the music for, very, very brief. And we did have one performance, and I remember just thinking, like, I get it now. You know, I get up and do my cover gigs. They're 4 hours. They're 9 to 1 a.m., and I kind of, it's almost muscle memory at this point. Certain songs come at certain times. I do this dance move here. I always do this here. You know, I always have the breath to do this here. It's very planned. But when I was doing my original songs for that one set, I was exhausted, and it wasn't even a full set. It was only 6 songs, and I was so drained. And the first thing I thought of when I got off stage was like, I have to text Liz, and I did, and I was like, oh my God, I get it now. I get it now. And when you're up there and it's your words in front of people, you know, it's your poetry, it's this art, this piece of art that you created from part of you, and now you're up on stage showing that to everybody. It's just, it's really different. And I do try to put heart and soul into every time I'm performing, you know, I do, people have mentioned that they can tell that I get into the music when it's covers too, you know, but I'm just saying there's this difference when it's original music, and there's also a difference of being up there with Liz. You know, I don't have that in any other band that I'm working with. I have an acoustic thing that we're getting going right now called Rosewood Harmony that we have a little bit of that, but because it's acoustic, it's pared down. You know, with Liz, like never before have I just gotten to open up and stare into somebody's soul while they're doing the exact same thing to me. And that's what it feels like being on stage with her. You know, and we have those moments. It's incredible. And it actually does feel like magic. It feels like art. And that's something that I can't even properly describe, but I'm like feeling emotional talking about it right now. I have goosebumps talking about it right now. And, you know, and that's how I feel when I listen to this album too. So anyway, that's my long way of saying that it's different.
Yes. And how it's different. Yes. That is amazing. I mean, that's kind of like what I love about people putting stuff out into the world. That's like why I have this podcast and created it again, is because I'm like, who's doing this? You know, there's all these people putting stuff out in the world, and they need a little extra support, you know, wherever we can do it. And so I just adore that so much, because it's exactly like, I understand the emotional turmoil of trying to create something, and they just try and give a little support so that more of that, because I really do think that's the big thing that makes Seattle special. You know, the tech industry is really here because all that art has helped make people's brains very creative, and those creative things are how they solve problems in the tech world. It's not the other way around. I really do. That's my personal belief, is that's how it works, and that's why Seattle's such a special place like that, for sure. Okay, well, since everybody now is stoked and wants to hear your album, how can they hear your album?
Call us for a private living room concert, and then come over.
6 feet away, of course.
Yeah. We come over with a plexiglass shield, and we play every song in front of you in your living room.
Yeah.
It sounds like this. But it's fun. It's fun.
6. Da, 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 da. Yeah.
Got it.
But you can go to latesseptemberdogs.da.ru/finland/piratebay.co.gov, I believe.
What?
Apostrophe malware.
Yeah.
Yep. Hashtag malware.
Yep.
LaceofDrummerDogs.com/shop. So we bought a bunch of stuff because we were going to have a big CD release party in LA at the Whiskey A Go Go. We had booked a great great show. And so we have records, we have CDs and t-shirts and all kinds of stuff. And then the world got shut down. So I have had to become a mail order business in the last 2 weeks and build a shopping cart and start learning how to send stuff from home. So I have all this stuff and all these packages and all this stuff that I have to start sending out. So we opened for business about a week ago, and I'm stuck at home with a UPS and a postal service account that don't work. And I'm doing my best to send things out to people in this new world that we live in. So lateseptemberdogs.com/shop gets you the album on CD or on vinyl. We made vinyl. Don't make vinyl if you're a band. It's a difficult and confusing process. It's completely different to anything you've done before. But it's very cool. I really like it. I'm really happy that we did it. It it looks cool. It sounds good. I really like it. We also did numbered foil stamped collector's editions of the record. So we only made 100 of those, and we won't be making more of them. So those are, we're only selling 89 of them. We kept the first 11 for ourselves. And so there will only be 89 of them. And those
are remember that on the home road show, the Antiques Home Road Show in the future, when you see number 1 through 11, it was one of the bands, you know, that's sort of extra money.
Right. When we get desperate.
Stamped Litz Timber Dogs record album signed by Rob Liefeld and Jim Lee from 1992. That joke was for three people.
Yep.
Comes with a trading card.
Awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, it was. It's a very specialized sort of level of collectible there.
Yes. Okay. So you actually did say something about your gig at the Whiskey Go Go that you were going to have. Are you going to try and still have something to replace that if the world ever starts again, or is that just gone?
So we have rescheduled that gig. World exclusive announcement right here. We have scheduled that gig. We hope that the world has opened up, that LA has opened up, and that the venue still exists and that everything still happens and people come out. The new date is Saturday, June 13th. We are now scheduled to be back at the Whiskey, playing with the band Edema. So if you remember those guys, and you're a fan, that's going to be a cool show to come to. We're not going to call it the CD release because the CD's out. We didn't want to wait any longer. But we are going to go down and do a Whiskey show. So, if you can make it and you were on the guest list for our CD release, we will still honor that. We will still have a guest list. If you want to make it for June 13th and the world is there and open for business, let us know and we will put you on the list. And so, yeah, let's hope. If not, they've told us they will reschedule us again and they'll give us a new date, you know, later on in the year, maybe next year, whatever happens. We have a good relationship with them. When we went down, we played there on a Thursday night. We played their acoustic on a Thursday night at like 6:30, and we put 35 people in the room. It's like literally in a Thursday afternoon, basically. And they really liked us. So they're going to continue to try and work with us and figure out a date if June 13th is closed. So
June 13th might be the human release party, like humans get released back upon the world.
Exactly. Which may or may not be a good idea. I mean, I don't even know. That might be too early. That might be a mistake. And I don't know, the way things are looking, that might not be a great idea. But for now, that's tentatively scheduled.
Yeah. Just because a club in LA says, well, we're going to open our doors, doesn't mean that our friends are going to go to that place.
Right. So
it's sort of it jockeying for position. And I'm sure if Edema, you know, if their fan base is just like, you know, I don't know if I want to get out yet. You know, I'm sure that band would also make a move as well. So hopefully the Whiskey will sort of be in touch with us and we can sort of go, you know, if that headliner pulls out, then we'll know. And then maybe we can jockey for another spot. Like, hey, well, you got some more local folks that aren't taking a plane from Seattle to kind of take that night and we can take a different night. I don't know. We'll see. But
right.
For right now, we're definitely scheduled June 13th. So that's the date.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll look forward to that and look forward to the world opening up again. For sure.
We also have, we also have in Seattle will be our first show locally since all of this, June 20th at El Corazon. That's
the Saturday after.
That's the Saturday after that we're back for. So that That's also, I guess, if the world is back to normal, that's going to be, if El Corazon is open, if these venues still exist, if everyone, you know, if all goes well, that's the idea at this point.
Yeah. Just writing this stuff down. yeah. So have you done anything else?
No.
Nothing. Nothing else, Jay? All right. The other two of you, though, did you guys do anything else since this started to, like, keep connected with your fans and whatnot? I know there's a lot of online stuff happening, obviously. Right now, we're talking, but, like, larger scale, Facebook Live, Zoom stuff, Twitch stuff, whatever.
You mean the band, or you asking Jay?
The band. I really was just joking because Jay was like, nope. But really, just what have you done?
we did a live upload, or I guess it was a live stream of a video, basically with a bunch of behind the scenes footage and pictures and stuff of the whole record on Facebook Live. Which you can see, and if you own the CD and you own the vinyl, you can play the music along with the visuals. Because Facebook has decided we don't own that music and we don't have the rights to it, and has muted the music in the video. So the video is available, but the music is not. So it's a very confusing way.
At the same time, basically.
Yes, you can do like the Alice in Wonderland the Pink Floyd Dark Side of the Moon and
Wizard of Oz,
not Somewhere Over the Rainbow, Wizard of Oz thing. Yes. Movies are hard.
They are. It's okay. Speaking of things you have the rights to, though, since you talk about it, you guys did two covers on this album. So first of all, you did Ain't No Rest for the Wicked, which I've definitely heard you play live a few times. But you played the Late September Dogs, which, if I remember correctly, that's where you guys originally came up with the name, because you were covering that song early on, and you were like, oh, this name is just temporary. If I remember talking about that in a show, and you were like, that's just a temporary name, Late September Dogs, that's what we're doing. And it is stuck. Does that have any extra meaning because of that sort of background with the song?
Yeah, that song, I mean, it's an amazing song, first of all. It's a Melissa Etheridge tune. And it was it's a really incredible tune. And it's from her first or second record. I can never remember. And years and years and years ago, one of our earliest gigs, we were just doing an acoustic gig, my sister and I think, and we had booked one show. We were living in Italy at the time, and we wanted to play, and we booked one show, and it happened to be like September 26th or something. I always screw this story up, and she's not here to correct me right now. So
I'll make sure to put links to the previous shows, because I think you told this story in a previous show. So people can go back and compare your story.
Just correct me and just like match up the, yeah. And we had just decided we didn't have a name. We couldn't come up with a name for the band. And that was one of the songs we were doing. And we just said, okay, well, we'll just call it that for this one show. And then, I don't know, 6 years later, we moved up here to Seattle, and we had started a new band, and we were in kind of the same situation. We had booked one show, and we had been rehearsing for 6 months, and we'd built a whole set, or three sets or something. We'd done a whole bunch of the covers and built a whole show, and then didn't have a name. It's oh, screw it, we'll just call ourselves LSD, Late September Dogs, for that one show. And that was years ago. And here we still are. And fortunately, yeah. we didn't make the LSD connection that it was LSD, Late September Dogs. Nobody ever believes me, but we didn't ever actually make that connection until about a year after we'd been gigging under the name. And somebody said, you know, your initials on the band are LSD. And we're like, no, that's awesome. So that
just
helps.
One more show, just, you know, and eventually we'll figure out a permanent name, right?
Yeah. You know, the one thing that you can always be sure of with bands is that they're lazy. So what's the path of least resistance in rock and roll, right? So like, what's the easiest thing? Well, I don't know. Here we are. Like, and here we are. I don't know.
Shirts.
Many years later, and it still says Late September Dogs. Awesome. So, and there is, the funny thing is there is another band that has the same name, and they're out of Germany, and they broke up in like 2005, I think.
I always screw up my searches.
Yeah, they're still out there.
Like, this isn't them.
No, it's a male voice. There's also a lot
of bands or artists covering that Melissa Etheridge song.
Yeah.
Like YouTube, so it doesn't look like, you know, it doesn't look like there's... it's not like they were around enough to really dominate lots of search results, thankfully, because of right. that mitigating factor.
Yeah. Right. And we own the .com, and we own the sort of, you know, we own the Facebook/Late September Dogs and, you know, whatever the social media stuff was. And they don't care. We've heard from them over the years a couple times, and they're done with it. So they don't really care anymore. So
Got it. So we are now here with the one true set of Late September Dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're suing Melissa Etheridge tomorrow to make sure right. that's our legacy.
Get her.
Yeah. That was his plan. Get her.
Get her all along this whole time. So, you had advice about not doing vinyl, but any advice about doing covers?
About wearing vinyl?
Sure. Any advice, period?
Yeah, olive oil. But wear olive oil first.
No, but covers. You know, like you, I remember you saying something about a bunch of the work that you had to do legally around getting the covers and stuff.
Yeah, covers are tricky. They're less tricky now because there are a couple companies that will actually go out and do the work for you, and you just pay a little extra, and they go out and get the license. And specifically covers, recording covers and putting covers on an album is not that hard. You just have to pay, and you just sort of estimate upfront how many you're going to sell, and you license, you pay a license upfront for separate from vinyl and CDs. And that's just for the recording and the printing of the recording. If you want to print the lyrics, you have to pay extra. And if you want a sync license, that's extra as well. So if you want to make a video of a cover, that's extra. YouTube has kind of solved that problem by just demonetizing your video and paying the original songwriter.
Yeah.
So most bands don't disagree or don't challenge you if you produce a cover video, because they're getting paid from the views, because there's this company called Google. I don't know if anybody's heard of this company.
I kind of have heard of them.
They have all of the information of everything everywhere since the beginning of time, and they can tell if the song, who owns the song and what the song is, and then they just pay the guy who wrote it.
Might have been a gal.
That's possible in our case, sometimes, specifically our case. And so that difficulty is taken away. But printing lyrics is difficult. And then the actual payment, once you go over your original estimate of what you've sold, if you sell more than you think. So like, we paid for 1,000 CDs and 1,000 records. If we sell more than that, we have to pay more for both of those songs to both of the original songwriters. And then for download.
So let's get it so that you have to pay those original songwriters some more money.
Let's do that.
Let's do that.
I'm a fan of that idea.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this, tell all your friends to go to lateseptemberdog.com/shop and buy all the stock so that they have to print more and pay those songwriters some more money. I mean, let's just do it for the songwriters.
That's the plan. Just for Melissa Etheridge needs our help, and so does Cage the Elephant.
Yes.
We cover both of their songs, and they could use more checks.
Right. And we'll do it by funneling money through you.
That's I'm perfectly happy to be the exploiter. No, expediter. Depends on your perspective, I guess, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Whatever the perspective is. Well, is there anything else that you wanted to say, discuss, or anything to anybody who might be listening while I have you here?
Actually, yes. Before we move on from the Late September Dogs cover song, I want to actually talk about that song, because if you've heard it on the new album, Liz actually recorded every single vocal part in that song. And I think that's the only song on the album where she's done every single vocal part. And if you've heard it, you'll hear that ranges from like a tenor, almost bassy sound to a high, ridiculous, ethereal soprano sound. And when she did it, I asked her, did so-and-so do that part? Oh, and did so-and-so do? And she said, no, I did them all. And I was absolutely floored. And so every time, that's actually, this is completely out of character for me to say this, but even though I'm not on it, that is my favorite song on the entire album, because it just shows this vocal range that I didn't even, having worked with her for the past 4 years, know that she had to that level, to that depth. It's absolutely incredible. So I like to always point that out when we talk about Late September Dogs cover song.
Being in a band with Liz is like being in a band with the best vocal coach you could ever not pay for on a weekly basis, who brings out the best in you and also can do things no other singer you've been in a band with can pull off. Mm-hmm. And is still very much sort of an empath and a caring, emotional person who wants to just see everybody around her do their best. And then if she does like see a way for things to get better, she's so like gentle about how maybe if you would do this for me, just try it this way. And then you don't have to do it. If you don't want to do it next week, it'll be a different conversation. And a lot of times it is. A lot of times the following week's rehearsal, there's a whole new idea about how to do things, and it just brings out the best in everybody, you know.
Speaking of anything but beautiful.
the other oldest song this band's been playing for a million years.
That's kind of a cover.
Yes, it's actually a cover of one of my favorite songs of yours. Cover yourselves.
Yeah, we cover ourselves. What do you think of the new one?
It's a very different tonality of, and the it kind of gives the song a different feel. Like the first song is really edgy, and it's rock, and it's, you know, it's kind of it's a lot more in your face about it. But this one is more stripped back and bearing your soul version of this message. I think it's always hard to hear different versions of a song and like a second version better than the first one you fell in love with.
Sure.
That's always the case, I think. So I unfortunately think it falls into that, but I still think it's great. So,
and you have, I think we've known you long enough that you have the original version, like the heavy, fast version of that song.
No, actually, I mean, I only have the one from your album with the titled album, Anything.
Oh, okay.
I don't have the early one. You have known me that long.
Yeah. But
like, what I had from original, I only had the case I don't know how long ago I lost the CD. You guys gave that to me before I left Seattle when I left Seattle.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Dan might have a Google link he can share with you for that. But
okay, for the original.
You have to listen to the 7-8 time Dream Theater version as well if he gives you that for free.
Yeah, no, I'll send you the I don't remember where that is. But yeah, that song has gone through so many changes when it was originally written, and then even just since we recorded it for this record, and then trying to figure out how to perform this version of this one live, it's gone through all these different changes. And that's one of the reasons Jackie was laughing, because we change it regularly, trying to figure out the best way to kind of pull this off live now.
Just one of these days, we're going to get the song will be done. Right?
No. Literally every time we do that song, whether it's a gig or whether it's rehearsal, literally every time we do that song, I know I'm doing something different. So I don't know about you guys, but I don't think I've ever done it the same twice ever.
Yeah. It's always a surprise.
Yeah. I have no idea what's going to happen as soon as we start. And it's kind of fun.
Nice.
Yeah. It's sort of Dan and Liz's Star Wars, or as assholes call it, Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope, where they keep like tinkering with it. Like, well, we're going to put R2-D2 behind some rocks this time, and then we're going to add some more aliens in the cantina. That would be that would be what George Lucas would do, perhaps, if that, you know, but the thing is, it goes back to what I was saying earlier about the mix of the album. All the changes they make are exciting and also pretty justifiable. And it's just that, like, well, what makes the most sense at this gig? What makes the most sense for this group of people on this particular stage? Are we going to have a cello player on this one? Well, then we're going to change our vocal arrangements. You know, we're going to change our guitar approach. We're going to, you know, there's a lot of room to move in a song like that that's arranged that way.
And then there's the added aspect of what exactly is my body going to do when we begin this song? I have no idea.
Yeah, the version of this that's on this record is sort of the closest to what was in my head kind of when we rewrote it. The original was kind of unnecessarily complicated and just me listening to too much Dream Theater. and then
I remember that.
Yeah, just a lot of John Petrucci and, you know, a lot of noodly. And this kind of constant drum solo that was the original riff. But the version that's on this, I think the string arrangement is really incredible that Brad Hawkins wrote. The part that is the dynamic of it is really good. The size of it is really good. The mix is great. I really like that there's a Spanish guitar on it. There's a kind of a nylon string guitar part that I got to play on that. And the guitar solo, I was happy with. My sister hates it. But I'm happy with it because it's the only whammy bar on the whole record. It's kind of angry and crazy and weird and scary, and that's the thing that I like about the guitar part on this one. And it's gigantic. So yeah, trying to recreate a lot of this stuff live is going to be difficult when we eventually try to do it. The other thing I did want to say though about playing live, hopefully we will at some point get to do this, but we had lined up Brian Beller and Joe Travers to play as our rhythm section when we play in LA. And that was going to be the March 28th gig. And I encourage anybody who's listening to this to go look up who those guys are, because they are monster players. And they are both incredibly accomplished musicians. And they were
going names again, just in case they passed too fast and somebody rewind a podcast.
Brian Beller from the Aristocrats. He's also Joe Satriani's touring bass player. He's toured with Steve Vai. He's an incredible bass player. And Joe Travers, who's toured with Zappa Play Zappa, Missing Persons. He's absolutely astonishing drummer. So they were going to play the show with us in LA, and hopefully we'll be able to play the June 13th show with us. And then if that gets postponed, hopefully we are able to get them to play with us at some point in the future. If it all gets rescheduled, and depending on tours and availability and stuff. So, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, there's a sort of a closing window there when everyone gets fired back up again, gigs get to happen. Who's paying for it? Like, how soon does someone have to be on a plane? You know, all that's got to be taken into account as soon as the world opens back up again. So,
yeah, what tours were canceled in the meantime?
And like for someone like them, what countries can they tour in as soon as possible? Right? Like, just because you go to one European country doesn't mean you can go to another one.
Yeah. Exactly. It's gonna be a slow rollout of travel again, for sure. It's not gonna just be like, all right, we're all back to normal again.
For the most part, if Seattle and LA are open, then the US is probably open, with the exception of maybe New York, right? We're hoping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So hopefully Washington, Oregon, and California have done enough right that we'll have an opportunity there for y'all. Get back up again. Let the world rejoice in the sounds of late September dogs, and realize that the world is a good place. For sure.
Let's hope, man.
Well, anything else before we go?
Double Cross Committee.
Yep. Don't forget.
Daryl. Yeah, maybe Daryl. When you get more openings in your schedule, if you need to talk to me about some more bands and stuff, Dan and I have been working on getting a Double Cross Committee record done for 10 years, and that was what was supposed to happen during this time as well. We were supposed to go to Hollywood, do LSD, come back, go in the studio with Double Cross Committee, start recording back at Dan and Liz's house. That's going to be an ongoing thing. But also, I mean, I've got online stuff I'm doing. I'm doing audiobook narration live on Facebook every week. I don't know. If someone wants to find me on Facebook/JaysMyth, spelled JayzeMyth, because Dan gave me that nickname a long time ago, and Facebook decided to make that my URL. Because I changed my name on screen for a while, and when I changed my screen name back to my proper name, Facebook didn't change the URL. It just kept it as Jay's Myth.
I didn't know that.
I didn't realize that for a long time. And then, so I've got a couple of YouTube channels where I do some audiobook recording, some Hunter S. Thompson and some Stephen King kind of, you know, until it gets taken down. But I like to do music in the background while I'm, reading that shit. And I'll try to do some more fun stuff on Facebook Live. And then that's most of it. Yeah. Until we get back to playing again. That's really it.
Right.
That's it.
Awesome. Jackie, do you want to pitch yourself any? I mean, you've already said some, but just, lay it out there some more while we're thinking about it.
She's producing a lot of my live nude sex shows on my Facebook Live, but I'm not sure what she's doing on her end.
Jay, that was private. So good luck getting video 4, 5, and 6.
It was OnlyFans.com, Jay's Smith.
I don't know what's going on with gigs. I still have stuff scheduled in May that I can't imagine is gonna happen. I don't really know. I am trying to through proper social distancing measures, my acoustic band has been trying to put out some new videos, just doing some acoustic covers. But again, that's difficult when I don't have a whole lot of expensive equipment. But I just hope that eventually we'll get to gigging this summer, and I'm really looking forward to the June LSD shows because that's right around my birthday. So if everybody hopes hard enough that for my birthday present we get to play June 13th at the Whiskey and June 20th at Elko, that's all I want. That's all I want for my birthday. So everybody hope hard.
Everybody make her birthday wish come true.
Please.
All right. Well, thank you so much for spending this time with me and talking with me today. I'm so happy that the orchestra project is finally available for people after so many. This has been the ongoing story of Seattle After Party, was like almost from the beginning to now, the reboot of the Seattle After Party.
So fun.
Like that's what it's going to. I even said to you guys that night of the listening party, you know, I was like, I've been thinking I'm going to do this. And then I got stuck at my house and I was like, I got to just do this.
I wanted to make sure that after three times on your podcast that we were able to at least once it was out to like come back and say, all right, like we actually did it. It wasn't vaporware, you know, it didn't disappear. We actually were able to finally finish it and put it into the world. So,
well, I had to reboot my old podcast to get there, but we got there.
Yay! So,
yes. Victory.
Victory is ours. Victory. So thank you very much. I appreciate it. Everybody go to lateseptemberdog.com/shop.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. All right.
Have a nice day.
All right. Thanks, man.
Teachers accidentally sharing nudes on Zoom calls is going to be the new porn thing on like Pornhub.